from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, what are friends for? Apparently they're for releasing either suspects or known terrorists. Dateline Washington, according to the Pakistan Daily Times, U.S. officials have offered no comment on the reported release by Pakistan of a man accused of aiding al-Qaeda. What? Just one more time, please. U.S. officials have offered no comment on the reported release by Pakistan of a man accused of aiding al-Qaeda. Well, it's only al-Qaeda. It's not beyond saying they would continue to work with Pakistan, quote, as a friend. I want those kinds of friends. Hey, buddy, I took about $100,000 out of your bank account. No problem, man. Quote, well, we coordinate closely with the Pakistani government on a host of counterterrorism and security issues. I don't have any more information specific to this case, says the State Department spokesperson. However, he continues, we're going to work closely with them as a friend and ally in our counterterrorism efforts. This is about the release of Mohammad Naeem Noor Khan, reported on Tuesday by the New York Times. The Times also said it appears unlikely the U.S. would try to take unilateral action to take him into custody. Not even him, let alone Osama bin who? Pakistani officials have said information from Khan led them to a Tanzanian wanted in connection with the 1998 bombings of American embassies in East Africa, which killed more than 200 people. Khan was released without charge and suddenly turned up at his home Monday morning. That's what friends are for. And your friends in FEMA, they giveth, they taketh away, they giveth, they taketh away. It's hard to keep up. Dateline Brooklyn, New York. Federal disaster aid for residents of Bay Ridge, neighborhood of Brooklyn, it was pummeled by the tornado earlier this month. A tornado in Brooklyn? Yes, you heard about it. The disaster aid is being held up until President Bush, on vacation in Texas for the rest of the month, decides whether he wants to release the funds. New York Governor Spitzer formally requested disaster aid from FEMA and called for swift action. Yes, he's a dreamer. Dreamers often do. FEMA inspectors made their own damage assessments on August 13th and sent a recommendation to the president. According to FEMA spokesperson Barbara Lynch says, the rare tornado, though, may not have generated enough media coverage to get the president's attention. That's the FEMA spokesperson saying that, not a critic. Quote, higher profile cases seem to move a lot faster, said Lynch. Yes. Like Katrina, quote, this situation didn't get the media attention it warranted, unquote. Agency inspectors, she said, were just flabbergasted by the millions of dollars of damage caused by the tornado, whose winds destroyed or damaged hundreds of cars and dozens of homes. Call to the White House was not returned by deadline. This is the Brooklyn, New York paper reporting this. Spitzer's office hasn't heard a thing either. All we can do is urge the president to act. Residents waiting for aid better not hold their breath. Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty applied for federal help after the very high-profile bridge collapse August 1st. The White House released the funds August 21st. It's 20 days later. I think that's pretty good for this. Says Hassan Hakmoon, despite what you think, he's a Brooklyn resident. This is ridiculous that help is so slow to come. He's busy moving his relatives out of their damaged house. We all pay our taxes, he says, but the government doesn't like giving it up. Yeah, that's it. That's what it is. And apropos of what we discussed in this broadcast, and what I discussed in this broadcast last week, that FEMA was implementing a controversial insurance policy that would leave nonprofits and public bodies on the hook for millions of dollars the next time a major storm strikes New Orleans. FEMA has now reversed that policy. Yeah, thanks to this show. Right. Quote, we've rescinded that policy, says the agency's associate deputy administrator for Gulf Coast Recovery. Yeah, they have one of those. Quote, it has caused a real furor down there. This was not the message we wanted to send to the business community. Unquote. Yeah, so eat your heart out, Brooklyn. Hello, welcome to the show. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. You know, success just breeds success, and so does failure. The Hanford Nuclear Reservation, known for its problematical cleanup of very high-level nuclear waste, is on the government's short list of sites for storing more radioactive waste. They could include contaminated metal for more than 100 U.S. nuclear plants. Talking about heavy metal, man. The waste, classified as low level, also includes radioactive detritus from medical procedures and research projects. By far, the most radioactive components would be waste from decommissioned nuclear plants. It's safe, it's clean, it's cheap, it's plentiful, it's nice. And from a Buffalo, New York project where the government is cleaning up a former nuclear fuel reprocessing center. That's the inventory to maybe be stored at Hanford is equal to the contamination estimated from Chernobyl, where about three-quarters of the radiation already contained in 177 leak-prone tanks at Hanford. Under orders from Congress, the U.S. Department of Energy is trying to find a place for a projected 200,000 cubic feet of nuclear waste to fill a hole in the nation's controversy-ridden disposal system. This, according to the Seattle Times. The waste is the most radioactive in the low-level category. So it's the highest of the low level. Federal officials concede that some of it is as radioactive as high-level waste, which includes spent nuclear fuel. The inventory contains transuranic waste, not getting personal. It's contaminated with plutonium and likely to remain radioactive for thousands of years. We can handle that. Thousands? That's just like hundreds. But what, more? It is, Hanford is, of course, undergoing a problematic cleanup expected to cost $50 billion or more and is near the Columbia River. That's just water for drinking and for fish and stuff. Sure, put it there. Put her there, pal. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Well, the British press just can't let go of the idea that the British presence in Basra in southern Iraq has been a failure. So today's entry from the Times of London. A British police chief in Basra has given a warning that Iraqi officers fired for corruption turned to terrorism in revenge. Well, I would. Mike Colburn, assistant chief constable of Bedfordshire, but currently the senior police advisor in southern Iraq, says many of those who had been dismissed or had retired were now involved in violence. The bleak assessment after 4 years of British attempts to convert the Iraqi police into an effective force comes within weeks of the expected handover of the city to Iraqi security control. Colburn said on BBC Radio that the British troops would not withdraw until the Iraqis were ready to take on responsibility for themselves. However, he admitted that a significant number of Iraqi police officers were still engaged in corruption and violence, including murder and kidnappings. Quote, "There are a number of Iraqi police service officers who are clearly aligned to militias," he said. "I think there is violence being committed by police officers and other Iraqi security forces officers. We know there are significant numbers of both serving officers and those who have been sacked and retired who continue to be involved in violence," unquote. The infiltration of militia-loyal police officers into the Basra force has been a threat to the stability of the city since the British military occupation formally came to an end in June 2004. Yeah, it's not an occupation anymore. That from the Rupert Murdoch-owned Times of London, and this. Almost a third of the people in the world have no access to a toilet, a privation that has dramatic consequences and leads to millions of deaths each year, according to experts at a water conference. Children are the main victims. The World Health Organization estimates 80% of all sickness in the world is attributable to unsafe water and sanitation. The problem has not attracted the attention it deserves and is described as the orphan child of the water sector, underexplored and underfinanced. It's one of those untold stories of the development sector, says the director of Center for Science and Environment in India, and a prominent expert. One reason, he says, is the taboo part. You don't talk about these issues so easily. It's a private thing. Oh, that's a quote from the director of World Water Week. Governments are beginning to make the issue a priority. Seems so simple. Girls and women are particularly vulnerable. Many girls do not pursue an education because schools do not have proper toilets or they must share toilets with boys. Eesh, I shared toilets with boys. You don't want to do that. For each dollar spent on improving sanitation and hygiene conditions, not at the same time, between $3 and $34 would be saved in the fields of health, education, and socioeconomic development, according to the UN. The UN has declared next year the International Year of Sanitation. So I guess we'll see. Little cartoon mascot of a smiling facility. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
You say you wonder why folks have to hate and hurt one another. Why they can't stay even, Steven, and live brother to brother. You can wonder in one hand and spit in the other. Cause baby, you don't really. How come there's always plenty money for some bullets and some bombs? But there's never enough for some nurses or some teachers or some moms. Ain't it cheaper filling Frigidaires than filling up tombs? You don't really want to know. Watch the world through the windshield of a Gossamobile. Only stop to scrape away the bugs that down it. You don't know or care what's changing hands underneath the table. Just as long as it's got plenty apple pie on it. How come terrorists and Texas T-boys share the same last name? Power brokers play with politics like some petty private game. And no matter who you vote for, who you get is just the same. Oh, baby, you don't really want to know. How they always go. Do the haves just have to keep on reaping everything the have-nots sow? Will creature comfort say so long when conscience says hello? Well, honey, you don't really want to know. You know I hate to be the one to say I told you so. But baby, you don't really want to know.
You know, you have to ask, in the face of a couple of events, or I do at least, in face of a couple of events in the last couple of weeks, wouldn't you, if you're going to screw up your whole life, wouldn't you want to do it for serious money? First case in point, Councilman Oliver Thomas of the New Orleans City Council, a promising, probable next mayor, articulate, well-liked by everybody in the community that at least wanted to speak up about him. Gone from the public scene, resigned. I'm told you about his apology. I think we had it on tape. Something. Last week. He's gone because he got caught by the feds taking bribes from a bar owner. Pampy Barre. Yes, only in New Orleans. Pampy. The bar owner who had a concession on a couple of city-owned parking lots near the French Quarter. And he was scared, our bar owner was, that when the new mayor came in, he'd lose the concession. So he pays Oliver Thomas this little money to try to keep the concession on the parking lots. So Oliver Thomas flushes his political career for less than $20,000. It's worth more than that, man. And Michael Vick, who this week admitted that he ran that dogfighting operation out of his home or near his home. Probably not in his home, because that barking could keep you up. The barking and the snarling and the thing. And this guy has a $130 million contract in the NFL, which he flushes for dogfights where the basic betting handle is about $13,000. Just want to go, babe, count the zeros. Just do that. Just count the zeros before you make a choice. It's always good advice, ladies and gentlemen. And now, it's time for me to read the trades for you. I know, they look like O's, but they're zeros. From Ad Age, tie-in with Burger King drives Simpsons movie ticket sales. And more. I'll read it for you. Filled with the best scenes from upcoming films, movie ads are among those that experts say catch the most consumer attention. Even in an age when fast-forwarding past commercials is gaining more traction. So it might come as a surprise that one research firm says that a movie tie-in ad, not a traditional film commercial, has proven more effective in getting TV viewers off the couch and into the theater aisles. A recent study by Integrated Media Measurement, well, at least they've integrated the media measurement. Can't integrate anything else. A San Mateo, California company that studies links between media exposure and consumer action found that consumers who saw ads that tied the Simpsons movie to Burger King were 40% more likely to see the movie than people who were exposed to only regular commercials for the film. Now it gets interesting. The data were collected by a panel outfitted with cell phones equipped with technology that created a, quote, digital signature, unquote, of all the available media to which they were exposed. Based on a timeline of when the media were viewed or heard, integrated media measurement can determine viewing audiences as well as certain types of consumer behavior. So I mean panel in the sense of a group of people, not a control panel. Just clearing that up for me. When it came to the Simpsons Burger King ad, IMMI panelists experienced either a TV, radio, or in-theater trailer ad an average of 6 times between July and August. And 9.1% of those people went to see the movie. But 13% of its panelists who saw the Burger King ad, in addition to regular movie ads, they were 40% more likely to go see the film than those exposed to TV, radio, and trailers promoting only the movie. They thought they were going to get burgers at the movie? Is that what you're saying? I don't know what they're saying. I'm reading it. Research such as integrated media measurements is Madison Avenue's new holy grail, says Ad Age, despite the flash, humor, and glitz of TV advertising, linking the ads to changes in market share, brand recall, or sales has long been a challenge. That's a nice advertising trade magazine way of saying nobody knows whether ads have any reason to be or any effect. So please buy. But this deficiency, the magazine continues, is under more scrutiny as digital video recorders gain more of a presence in TV households and some viewers start to watch portions of their favorite programs online. Have to integrate more media measurement. But we won't put it on buses. And for Media Post, Google's YouTube unveiled a new ad model offering advertisers like BMW the option to run video ads within both professional and user-generated content. The YouTube in-video ads, they're not invidious, they're in-video, are semi-transparent overlays that appear in the bottom 20% of the video player. The Rich Media Animations. You and I might just say it's distracting, you see. But to the industry, it's Rich Media. Show up 15 seconds after the chosen content begins. The overlay lasts up to 10 seconds. The overlays also have interactive functionality, allowing users to click through to an advertiser's website. Or to launch a new player that will run a video ad and bring the user back to the content at any time. Advertisers have the option to target users by age, sex, geography, day part, and video genre. Speculation has continued to grow as to how Google would monetize its $1.65 billion investment in YouTube. According to Shashi Sheth, YouTube's product manager, the advertising team has been experimenting with a number of models. Quote, for the past 3 months, we've run millions of ads to see how users react to the different models, and we've taken away the models that don't work, says Seth. For example, we know that users don't want to be interrupted at the start of a video, which is why the overlay doesn't start until 15 seconds in. As to whether YouTube will become overwhelmed with in-video ads, Seth added, quote, I certainly cannot see that happening. And our users are not shy about telling us what they like and what they don't, so it behooves us to be careful. Unquote. We'll check back in about a year and see how that behooving is going. See if there's good behavior at work. Something one must do when I read the trades for you. Ladies and gentlemen, we're coming up to the second anniversary of the disaster along the Gulf Coast, hurricane damage in Mississippi and parts of Alabama, and the disastrous flooding of the city of New Orleans, thanks to the defective work of the United States Army Corps of Engineers. A lot of folks finding their way to New Orleans to do those obligatory two-year follow-up stories. Here's a suggestion. Why don't you go talk to the Dutch? I know it seems far afield, but the Dutch, who've built a flood control system built to protect them against 1 in 10,000-year events, might have something to say about what the United States government has accomplished in the past 2 years, struggling to meet a deadline 4 years away to protect against 1 in 100-year events. So that would be your assignment, if you wanted to, if you're a news person listening and you wanted to get out of New Orleans, go talk to the Dutch. Meantime, this is from my new CD. It's imagining what Bush will be saying as he arrives there on Tuesday, and it's coincidentally enough, the video for this song arrives Tuesday at mydamnchannel.com.
Water. Didn't get close with a 10-foot pole. We failed to accomplish just what we ordered. But we're gonna make New Orleans whole. New Orleans whole. Not many folks there now, but there's gonna be plenty. And the ex-gov be out on parole. And I got construction biz pals, maybe 10 or 20. Gonna help make New Orleans whole. New Orleans whole. Make more like us. So no one needs the bus. They said we were slow pokes. Now we're gonna be spunky. Never too late to be in control. Building a new town, too busy to be funky. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. Still ain't the time for pointing those fingers. That comes later. Memories grow cold. Even though lots of the slime still lingers, we're gonna make New Orleans whole. New Orleans whole. Make them more like such great ideas now for this whole reconstruction. The best and the brightest gonna play their role. And locals have bit parts in the production. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. New Orleans whole. New Orleans whole. New Orleans hole. Dig a hole for me, boys.
This is Le Show, and there's news from the new Iraq. Of course there is. More than a year after the Pentagon launched an ambitious effort. I have to say, before I even launch into that, this is now a what appears to be at least a media turning point. The spokespeople for the administration, the supporters of the administration, are now saying, as we approach September, that all-important September, this is a turning point. Boy, things are going well now. Oh, the surge is working, so let's keep it up. So it's useful to check to see how things are going in Iraq at this. How many turning points have there been, by the way? Have we gone into a circle yet? This from the Washington Post. More than a year after the Pentagon launched an ambitious effort to reopen Iraqi factories and persuade U.S. firms to purchase the goods made in those Iraqi factories, Pentagon officials acknowledge the initiative has largely, what's the F word, failed because American retailers have shown little interest in buying products made in Iraq. Of course, you can buy more dangerous products from China any day of the... The Pentagon thought U.S. firms would be willing to help revitalize the war-torn Iraqi economy and create jobs for the young men who might otherwise join the insurgency. But the effort, once considered a pillar of the U.S. strategy in Iraq, has suffered from a pervasive lack of security and an absence of reliable electricity and other basic services. Gee, I wish we had the aid of the most powerful country on earth. I bet they could fix that. Oh, Iraqi officials have recently highlighted pending deals with Walmart and JCPenney, businesses they said were considering purchasing Iraqi products from the few local factories that have restarted. But the two companies last week said they're not in negotiations to buy Iraqi products, citing Iraq's uncertain future and the questionable viability of potential suppliers there. Three officials who've worked with the Pentagon's task force to support business and stability operations in Iraq said in recent interviews the effort to link Iraqi industries with U.S. retailers has been a, quote, failure. Paul Brinkley, the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense in charge of the task force, acknowledged that promising opportunities with U.S. companies have slipped away as the war's popularity fell. Quote, I thought we would be further along at this point, but we have a lot of momentum building in terms of support and a lot of momentum building in terms of finances. America's economic might has still not been brought to bear in Iraq. Unquote. More billions. That's what we need. We just haven't, we haven't given enough. It's like Jerry. Haven't given enough. The task force's assumption from the outset, shared by top U.S. commanders, was that jump-starting Iraqi factories would push young men into paying jobs and away from violence. In the past year, 4,000 jobs have been created, far short of the stated goal of having more than 11,000 back at work this year. Less than 5% of the 200-plus Iraqi factories have been reopened. The official said he still believes several could open this year, but progress has been slower than he expected. All right. One indicator. Just a metric. Two, escalating the political crisis. Three secular cabinet members resigned yesterday, according to a senior member of the group. They'd boycotted cabinet meetings since August 7th because of frustrations with what they saw as Prime Minister Maliki's divisive leadership style. Gee, it worked so well for Karl Rove. From the Times of London, how are things in Baghdad? The citizens of Baghdad are facing another horror, aside from suicide bombs and ethnic cleansing, this summer, day after day of blast furnace heat without electricity or water to keep them cool. Gee. It's almost as if the economic might of the world's... The temperatures regularly exceed 126 degrees Fahrenheit. There's your global warming right there. You're hit by a wall of heat whenever you step outside, says the Rupert Murdoch-owned Times of London. The millions of Baghdadis unlucky enough to live outside the green zone receive fewer than 3 hours of electricity a day. No power for fridges, fans, or air conditioners. Most of the time, no water in the taps. This is the worst deprivation they've suffered since the fall of Saddam Hussein in 2003. Quote, it is unbearable. It is hell, a jail in hell, said a 28-year-old engineer who would not give the Times of London his name. Generators are one of the few growth industries in Baghdad. At night, families try to sleep on their rooftops despite the roar of U.S. helicopters overhead. Water is almost as scarce as electricity. Baghdadis have bought pumps that suck water from the pipes whenever it is flowing. This is usually in the middle of the night, so everyone leaves their taps on just in case. Tempers flare. Fights are commonplace. The Iraqi people spend their money on fuel, water, and generators, and every day is worse than the day before, the engineer said. In Saddam Hussein's time, Baghdad received as much as 22 hours of electricity a day. Its residents cannot understand why 4 years after his removal, their city is, according to the electricity minister, quote, semi-paralyzed. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has spent $4 billion on more than 500 electrical projects. But demand has surged by 70% as televisions, computers, and other electrical appliances have poured into the country. A much bigger problem is the refusal of other provinces to share their power with Baghdad, which has few power stations of its own. But, as I say, we're pushing towards September, which is the time for the Petraeus Report. So we'll introduce a new feature here on the show, celebrating the impending arrival of the Petraeus Report, named for General Petraeus, who's our chief forces over there.
Viva Petraeus! Viva Petraeus!
So it's called the Petraeus Report, although we learned last week that the report is going to be written by the White House. Nonetheless, most media continue to refer to it as if it's being written by General Petraeus. But here's a telltale note. As I say, we learned last week it's going to be written by the White House. This weekend, the White House has sent briefers out to tell newspapers like the Washington Post the White House plans to keep in place its existing military strategy and troop levels after the mid-September report from General Petraeus. White House officials say privately they're not contemplating making major shifts before early next year. They say next month's report is likely to highlight what they see as significant improvements in security. One White House official says he does not expect a, quote, wholesale change in plans next month. The key sentence, though, is that the officials have not yet seen what General Petraeus says in his report that will be included in the report. Several said they have not heard even privately from General Petraeus about the contents of his report, yet they're already saying what the White House's plans are in reaction to the report that he will not write. And yet, even now, somebody is at work deep in the White House writing it.
Okay. When did Snow say we had to have this ready?
I thought he said the report was being made public in mid-September.
Mid-September? Yeah, but you know it has to go through all the layers.
I know it has to go through. Thanks, Sean. I've been a White House writer since you were still an intern at Newsmax. I'm just saying. So why are we the only people in this whole wing working in late August?
I'll tell you what I think, Mike. It's a punishment for being the only Jews for Jesus in the shop.
You know, you're probably right. If we were born three times, it still wouldn't be enough.
Yeah. So, where should we do lunch? Mess or the dining room?
It's only 10:15.
You're right. We should get to work. The Petraeus report isn't going to write itself.
I'd pay it $50 if it would. It
probably wouldn't have changed for $100.
Okay. Petraeus report. Mm-hmm. Okay, he's a general, mm-hmm. So it should be snappy, short sentences, to the point, precise, military.
You were in the military?
I wrote sports roundups for American Forces Radio.
That so does not count.
Okay. Shall I read off our other choices from the style menu? Ponderous and unreadable, bright and lively, viewing with alarm.
Fine, short sentences. I like fewer words to write before lunch.
Will you stop with the lunch? This is important.
I know. I'm focusing on important. Mm. So look, when in doubt, go to the source. What does Petraeus say about the military side of the search?
Okay. We're cooking. Got it right here on the secure server. Fucking amazing.
What's wrong?
Your password has expired.
Use mine. Lunchman39.
Okay. Welcome, Lunchman39.
See?
Here we go. He says, measured progress in certain areas on the military side of the equation.
Oh, please wake me up when it's over.
I'm done.
You're done. I'll tell you a word I've never written and I never will write. Equation. That word scared me in middle school, and it still scares me.
Okay. Let's make it military, but not scary.
You know, up wouldn't be bad either.
No.
How about good progress? Boss always likes saying that.
He says measured. Measured isn't good.
I measured the window before buying blinds. That was good.
Acceptable?
Acceptable progress?
Well, I mean, it's literally true. We're accepting it.
When do you ever reject progress?
You're making my point.
Ooh, that hurt. I say we turn on C-SPAN.
First time the amendment passed, but we...
That's C-SPAN 2.
Satellite thingy says C-SPAN.
The satellite thingy is wrong. That's tape of a senator. Two is senators.
Major interest groups that had a major stakeholders in the issue.
Okay, I'm bored enough to think about lunch.
Come on, what kind of progress are we reporting?
Okay. Welcome progress, significant progress, superior progress, dynamic progress, excellent progress.
There you go. I knew if we squeezed the grape hard enough, we'd get Manischewitz. Actually, though, significant is closer to the mark.
Yes, true.
Okay, moving along. Certain areas. Mm. Certain areas. That sounds limited.
Offer only available in certain areas.
Yeah, right. It sounds like a contest you can't get in on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or a lottery that doesn't operate in your state.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely small print talk.
Not open to residents of the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, or Guam.
5.7 APR for the first 6 months.
Requires 2-year service contract.
Yeah, okay. So, areas is good.
I like areas. Sounds spacious.
It sounds like we're familiar with the country. Mm-hmm. These things are happening in these areas.
Right.
It's very boots on the ground.
Right. Okay, so we're looking for a new description of the areas where we're making significant progress.
Whoa, somebody hit the focus button.
It's my pre-lunch spurt. So I'm guessing all areas would be wrong.
I'm going to mute this guy. It'd be great, but, you know, somebody in Rove Town would exit out. We'd just have to work one more weekend.
Okay, ixnay on the all, hey. Major areas.
What's a major area?
It's like a big place.
Meaning all the progress is being made in the, what, cities?
Don't look at me, I'm just spitballing. Mm. Significant areas?
That's lazy spitballing.
Oh, suddenly you're a critic.
I can do proactive. Surprising progress.
We're back to progress? We were expecting progress.
We were surprised at how well our expectations were met.
The surprise could be surprisingly little.
Suddenly you're the critic.
I'm just saying.
$10 says you don't know the name of that senator.
I don't know the names of half the senators.
I mean that one. $20.
He's the one whose wife died in a plane crash.
You are so faking.
Convincing faking, though. Had you for a nano. Pfft.
Come on. We're so close to being done with this phrase.
I'm so close to ordering the chicken Caesar.
You know that's an aberration. The real Caesar has no chicken.
You're talking about the salad or the guy?
The salad. Chicken is a Californianism.
They did good.
Yeah.
Good areas. Sizable areas. Excellent areas. We didn't use excellent before. Here's its stirring comeback.
You're pitching.
Okay, sorry. Important areas.
Significant progress in important areas.
What?
It looks goofy.
Read it.
Today we can report significant progress in important areas.
I think it flows.
You said it blows?
I said it flows.
My mistake. Darn.
What happened?
I lost the whole sentence.
I am so at lunch.
No, look. It's not rocket science we're doing here.
You're right. We're talented writers.
That's right.
With deputy assistant to the president on each of our doors.
That's right.
This should be an easy morning's work.
Absolutely.
So we're failures.
No, it's just... Today we can report significant progress in key areas.
That is brilliant. How did you...
I was hitting the keys.
I tipped my hat to the master. Mess in 10.
I'm there.
I'm going home.
Give the ad a word, give the ad a word.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Deadline Coon Rapids, Minnesota. The Coon Rapids Little League Club has apologized after some poor sportsmanship. Two players on the field spat into their hands before shaking hands with players from an opposing team, the team that knocked them from the Little League World Series. Coon Rapids manager Mark Lowe issued the apology. The spitting was caught on national TV. It was nothing like the fuss Janet Jackson's wardrobe problem caused at the Super Bowl, but Dateline Roseburg, Oregon, the company that booked the rock group Poison at the Douglas County Fair, has apologized for a video clip shown during a performance. One segment showed bare-breasted women. An official with the booking company, Fran Romeo, said the company had been booking Poison for years and had never run into the problem. She said nobody knew the clip would be shown and that her company would have moved to block it if it had been known, if it had been told. Poison's talent agency also apologized, saying that Poison used its artistic license as a rock band and offended some people in the process. Just like the use of the words, Poison used its artistic license. State Senator of New York Dale Volker apologized after a Buffalo television station showed him using a disparaging term to describe a Rochester Institute of Technology professor of West African descent. Volker called RIT civil engineering professor Abi Agayere a bohunk during a meeting this week. That word is defined as a disparaging term for a person from East Central Europe. Agayere is a native of Nigeria and an American citizen. He's an expert in structural engineering and bridges. Volker apparently made the comment to discredit Agayere's recent assessment that a Lancaster bridge was in poor condition. Volker says his comments may have been misrepresented, misunderstood, and a poor choice of words, to which I am sincerely apologetic for, and one which I regret. Remedial grammar for that gentleman? What do you think? As well as learning the proper slurs with which... Dateline New York, the head of one of the leading U.S. insurers in non-standard high-risk personal auto insurance, apologized for some substandard behavior. Spying in church on people who had sued the company. Progressive Corporation Chief Executive Glenn Renwick apologized for the use of private detectives who went undercover to join an Atlanta church group in order to discredit a couple suing the insurers. What the investigators and progressive people did was wrong, period, Renwick said. I personally want to apologize to anyone who was affected by this. Australia's opposite... Any of you wondering why... incumbent governments still keep getting elected in Britain, America, and Australia. Australia's opposition leader has apologized for his taxpayer-paid visit 4 years ago to a New York City strip club. Kevin Rudd said he was too drunk to remember what happened, but he apologized if his behavior, quote, caused any offense to anybody whatsoever that evening, unquote. Rudd was representing Australia at the UN when he went to the strip club. Scores! A night spot popular with UN diplomats and journalists. He was accompanied by the editor of the New York Post. The premier of Queensland predicted Rudd's adventure would endear him to voters and show he has, quote, blood in his veins. I just like the excuse, I was too drunk to remember what happened. The California State Employees Retirement System has issued a mea culpa after some 400,000 brochures mailed to retirees contained their Social Security numbers visible through the address windows of the envelopes. London Mayor Ken Livingstone has apologized for his city's role in the transatlantic slave trade, saying London was still tainted by it. The Justice Department has apologized and paid $250,000 to an Iraqi refugee wrongly detailed 4 years ago when he stepped off an Amtrak train in Montana to stretch his legs. He spent 8 days in custody before officials realized their mistake. They dropped deportation proceedings against him the following month, but he sued 2 years later, seeking an apology and financial compensation, both of which he has now received. The South African city of Cape Town has apologized to undertakers for the continued shortage of burial space, despite the city's promise to solve the problem. A newspaper in Malaysia has published a front-page apology Thursday for printing an image of Jesus Christ holding a cigarette. Former astronaut Lisa Nowak apologized Friday to her romantic rival. And an aide to the California National Guard's top general has been suspended and apologized for running a website called howtokillpeople.com. The site does not give instructions on how to kill people. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, that's going to put the cap on this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time from New Orleans over these same stations. And it would be just like me being in New Orleans if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The newly refurbished HarryShearer.com is kind of okay now. Yeah, that's what I hear. It's a place to go to email this broadcast if you'd like. Check playlists for this broadcast or to get a direct link to the videos at mydamnchannel.com. And a tip of the show, chapeau to the Pittsburgh, San Diego, and Chicago desks. As well as perpetual thanks to Pam Halstead. I say this every once in a while just to let you know, I have no stake in this operation, but if you ever want to know where Le Show is being streamed if you're away from home on a particular Sunday, a wonderful little resource called publicradiofan.com tells you where all your favorite public radio shows are being streamed anytime you check in. Publicradiofan.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.